This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. A biography of The Doors lead singer Jim Morrison was entitled No One Gets Out of Here Alive. And that's true for you, me, and every human being on the planet. But how we go out remains a big question. This week on The Compass, we talk with two local folks who have devoted themselves to ensuring that we all have a chance to go out in peace and comfort. I know, not the most fun subject in the world, but since we're all going to be on the brink someday, we thought it would be helpful for you to know that it doesn't have to be terrible. What are your options? Let's go inside The Compass and find out. November is National Hospice and Palliative Care Month. If you don't know what hospice means or what palliative care is, you're kind of lucky, because that could mean you haven't yet had to deal with death in a personal way. Tammy Tarsa and Tom Duke deal with death on a regular basis. Tammy is the executive director of Jefferson Healthcare's Home Health and Hospice team, and Tom is a member of the Jefferson Healthcare Hospice Board. Tammy runs the program, and Tom helps raise money to keep the program alive. We ask them what they do, why they do it, and how the pandemic has impacted a program that often involves close, face-to-face personal contact with a person who is dying. We begin with Tammy Tarsa. For those who don't know, what is hospice? What does that mean?
So the goal of hospice is to provide comfort to patients at the end of life. So oftentimes patients who are experiencing end of life often have a recent diagnosis, and so they're grieving. They don't know how to handle that situation. It could have been something that has been coming, and they've just gotten to the point where they're recognizing that there are no more curative treatments and that they are going to die. This illness is going to kill them. And so hospice comes in, and we wrap our arms around the patient, and we wrap our arms around the family, and we provide comfort, we provide support, and we make sure that the patient and the family have everything they need to have a death that is as much, that speaks to what their goals are and what they want from that as they can. You know, a lot of people think that death is a horrible thing. And I think that as a society, we kind of buy into that. But well, if you were to ask me, and I think if you were to ask people that work for hospice, we think death can be beautiful. It's sad, yes, and it can be hard and it can be difficult, but there's beauty in helping people take that last step in a way that is dignified and comfortable and supportive. And we can help families have something really positive to remember from that experience, and not just the negative aspects that we sometimes as a society connect with death.
Why did you get involved with this particular part of healthcare? How did that happen?
So I experienced a significant loss in my life. And while that didn't drive me to hospice, it did drive me to nursing. And what I believe with every piece of my being is that every person deserves great care. And that great care should start the minute they're born, actually before they're born, right, in their mother's womb, and it should continue until they take their last breath. And I love hospice because it gives me that intimate contact with patients, and home health to some extent too. It's a different type of intimacy, but for me, it takes me back to that original goal of being a nurse, of being able to connect with patients and really care for patients. I've worked in the hospital setting, and I enjoyed what I did there, but it's a different type of nursing. And so I believe that I can connect with patients in a different way when I'm in their home. In hospice, I was given so much, and my goal is to give that back.
Now, you're the executive director of Jefferson Healthcare's Home Health and Hospice. I would assume by that title that means you're just an administrator, but it sounds like that's not quite true.
Well, and so at this point in my career, I am an administrator, but I've been through every step. I started out working as an aide in the hospital. I received my RN license, and then I, you know, went on to get my BSN and now my MBA, and I'm still doing schoolwork. So I've done all of the steps. And so even though I am now in an administrative position, my goal hasn't changed. And so I wear a different hat now, but my belief that everyone deserves quality care, great care, hasn't changed. I just fulfill my personal mission now in a different way.
What makes hospice different from other types of hospital care?
So I think the biggest difference is that our unit of care is different. So when you're in the hospital or in a primary care clinic, you as the patient are the primary focus of care. And certainly they're talking with the family and they're educating the family when a patient's being discharged or when there's an illness that has to be managed. But the patient is the primary focus. In hospice, that's not true. In hospice, certainly our patient is the center of the care, but our unit of care also involves the family. It's very much integrated into what we do. The family is as important as the patient themselves.
It sounds to me like hospice care is sort of a hands-on thing with patients, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. How has the pandemic affected hospice services?
So we really haven't seen any changes in what we do. Sometimes how we do it has changed. So to protect the patients, to protect our staff, we now wear masks and we wear goggles or face shields. And if someone is COVID positive, you know, we're fully dressed in our PPE. But that hasn't changed how we care for patients. It just has changed what we look like while we're caring for patients. So for us, I would say the impact has been very little.
When would someone consider hospice? Under what conditions?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And this is a question actually that we are challenged with as an industry. And I think for me, it goes back to that culture that we have of always wanting to cure, right? No one wants to die, and death is inevitable. We are all walking that path. But it's hard to accept, and it's particularly hard to accept when it's a diagnosis that you weren't expecting, right? I have a cough, I go into the hospital, and oh my gosh, now I have lung cancer, or, you know, I have terminal COPD. And so it's hard sometimes to accept that. But what we will say is that the best time to come onto hospice is at the beginning of that terminal diagnosis, because then we can really provide all of the services that hospice provides. We are challenged with short lengths of stay. So people come on at the very last minute, and it's hard to get control of any symptoms they may be having. It's hard to provide that emotional support that families and patients so need as they're reaching those end stages. And so if patients come on early, we can help prepare them for what's gonna happen. And, you know, one of the great things about hospice is that we aren't making these decisions, right? We're talking with the patients and the family, and we're asking them, what is your goal? What do you want the end of your life to look like? And our job is to help facilitate that. Now, is it always realistic, and can we always accomplish it? No, we can't. But we will do our ever-loving best to help you reach those goals. You know, I love to tell the story that in a different organization before I came here, we had a young woman. She had kids in high school, and she had a terminal cancer diagnosis, and she was reaching the end. She was hospitalized because as a young woman, you want to live. You want to see your kids graduate and get married and have children, but came to the realization that wasn't going to happen. So her goal then became, I want to see my kids one more time in the marching band. And that was what we helped her accomplish. We managed to get her pain under control while she was in the hospital. We got her home, and we were able to help her reach that last goal. And for some people, that might not seem like a big thing, but for that woman, it was everything. And we helped her do that. And that's what hospice does for people. So the sooner we can get them on, the sooner we can help them meet those goals and really fulfill what those are for the rest of their life.
Hospice is clearly an end-of-life care system. The thought just occurred to me because I believe in the state of Washington, assisted, I don't know, end-of-life suicide, whatever you want to call it, is legal. Is that have anything, is hospice connected with that in any way?
So they are not connected legally, but we do have patients that choose that route. And so what we can do, we cannot be in the home while someone is taking the medications that will end their life, but we can support that patient up to that point in time. We can leave the home and we can sit in the driveway while that occurs, and then we can go back in while that patient is dying, and then we can assist the family with all of those steps that come after that. So while we're not linked legally, it doesn't stop us from helping those patients at all.
Now, who pays for hospice? Is the patient out of pocket?
So Medicare is, particularly in our county, in the demographic that we have, Medicare is the primary payer source. Most insurances have a hospice benefit. Medicare covers, so I'm going to say this and then I'm going to put a qualifier on it, Medicare has a 100% benefit. However, the benefit only covers those things, supplies, medications that are related to the terminal prognosis. So it doesn't cover everything. It covers those items that are connected to the terminal prognosis of the patient. Other insurances may have a copay, and they're different, right? I couldn't give you a list of each of those.
Can you tell us a personal story about the hospice service? Maybe something about how it has helped a person or a family?
So one of the best things about being a hospice provider is that we get to see the rewards of the work we do, and we see it in different ways. We see it for sure as we help a patient pass comfortably and with dignity, but we also see it as we work with families and as we help them accept the passing of their loved one and then help them grieve through it afterwards. But Medicare requires that we provide 13 months of bereavement care after a patient passes. That is not reimbursed by Medicare. That is a part of what they ask us to do, require us to do, but they don't pay us to do. So all of that care is provided through gifts from families who have utilized our services and have really appreciated the service that we provide. But then over those 13 months, our spiritual care, our bereavement counselor, works with those patients and families. And every month we have a celebration of life, not this year because of COVID, but every other year, we have a celebration of life. And we can see the fruits of our labor and the number of people that come in to celebrate the life of the person that they've lost. And I think that celebration is the heart of what we do, because it's more than just the patient. It's those people that they leave behind.
How long are people generally on hospice? I suspect it depends on the nature of their illness, yes?
It does depend on the nature of their illness, and it depends at what point they decide that they are no longer going to seek curative treatment. So on average, I wrote it down because I thought you might want to know. So on average, we have 55.8 days. So our patients on average are on 55 days. But if you looked at the individual length, it would vary from 2 days to, you know, a year and a half. So it varies greatly.
You talked, I think, a little bit about this, but what kind of spiritual and emotional support for patients does hospice offer?
So we provide, as I said, 13 months of bereavement counseling after a patient passes. But we also provide bereavement and spiritual care services while our patients are on our services. So they're part of our interdisciplinary team. Our spiritual care advisor is part of our interdisciplinary team, and she's an active member. And as we're working with patients on what their end-of-life plan looks like, she's an active participant in that, as is our MSW, medical social worker.
What is a comfort therapist?
So comfort therapists are different depending on the hospice organization that you are talking about. Our comfort therapists provide music therapy as well as massage therapy. And so, you know, as patients are passing, our goal is to provide that comfort. And comfort occurs in many different forms. It's not just medical. It's not just prescription. It's touch. And so massage helps that. It's music. It's that feeling that music evokes. And so those comfort services are what we provide.
Are they still doing the massage part here in the era of COVID?
We are. So we took a break. We stopped in March, but we restarted again, I think, in July. And so we have been providing massage therapy for a few months now.
How often does someone from the hospice team visit the patient during this process?
Well, it depends on how often the patient needs us to visit, right? And so each patient is different. It's going to depend on where they are in their journey, and it's going to depend on what symptoms they may be having and what we're trying to manage. So it's going to be different. I'm going to say normally we probably see them, if everything's just status quo, once a week, but that would be the nurse would see them once a week. And then you may have an aide in there. You may have a comfort therapy. You may have a volunteer. You may have the social worker, the bereavement counselor. So it really does vary based on the patient's needs, but we're in regular contact with our patients and families, and we are available 24/7.
How long has Jefferson Healthcare's home health and hospice program been in existence?
Yeah, so we were Medicare certified in 2002.
How many people are on the hospice team and what are their roles?
So we have a handful of nurses. We have four nurses that provide care. We have a social worker, a spiritual care and bereavement counselor. We have aides. We have our hospice medical director.
Speaking of that, yeah, what role do volunteers play in hospice?
You know, so volunteers are a huge piece of what we do. When hospice was first created as an industry, it was provided all by volunteers. They were not paid caregivers. And so when Medicare created the hospice benefit, they held on to a piece of that. And so Medicare regulation requires that 5% of our services are provided by volunteers. So they play a really important piece, but they also play a really important piece because they see the patients in a different way. We are going in and we are helping those patients, but it's a different type of help. The volunteers come in, and because they're not addressing those medical needs, they're really helping to address some of those emotional and support needs that patients and families have. So they're a vital piece of what we do. COVID hit in March and life as we knew it kind of stopped. And so our volunteers have not been in patients' homes since then. We are just now going to begin reintroducing the volunteers into our patients' lives virtually. We are going to be providing letter writing and phone calls with some potentially reading to patients over the phone, as well as then helping with some errands to support the family members and caregivers. So, and that is, we're starting that back up in November. So limited what we'll be doing, but still reaching out to those volunteers for the great work that they do.
Interesting. So if someone is listening to us right now and they want to get more information about hospice services, what do they do? Who do they contact?
So they can contact me, and they can reach me at 360-385-0610, and they can ask for Tammy.
And say that number one more time now that our listeners have the pencil in hand.
Sure. It's 360-385-0610.
Well, thank you, Tammy. And my last question is always the same with every interview. Is there anything I did not ask you about that you might want to throw in?
Yes, I will. I would like to add something. So we have a need in our community. Because of the type of community we are, because it's a retirement community, there are people who live alone. And hospice is very difficult for people that live alone, because when you reach the end of life, you can't take care of yourself. And so we have a need in our community to be able to service those patients. And my big arching goal for this community is that we would have a place for patients like this to come, where patients could come and live out the end of their life, where they're receiving care from us. And so if anyone would like to donate toward that, a hospice house of some type, we would be happy to have that discussion with you, because it's a service that's greatly needed here in our community. And it's a huge endeavor. But that's my goal. So my goal, by the time I'm done here, I want to have that hospice house, and I want to have it in operation and benefiting our residents in our community, because it's desperately needed. So call me.
And now we talk with Tom Duke, a longtime mental health counselor in Port Townsend, who volunteers as a board member and fundraiser for Jefferson Healthcare's Home Health and Hospice Program. Tom, when and why was the foundation started?
It was started 11 years ago when the need became apparent that the hospice program itself couldn't provide some services that really would benefit hospice clients, our patients, as well as their families. So 11 years ago, the foundation was formed as a 501c3 nonprofit.
And can you tell us about your mission statement? Why do you exist? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, the mission statement is really very simple. It's to educate the community about the benefits of hospice and then to raise money that we donate to the hospice program here in Jefferson County.
And one of the reasons we're talking today is because there is a pandemic going around, in case our listeners haven't noticed. And that has affected an awful lot of things. And I imagine because of the nature of what hospice does, it definitely affects hospice. How about the Hospice Foundation? How has the pandemic affected, for instance, fundraising and the educational outreach that you do?
Well, it's affected it rather drastically, actually. Normally, we do educational activities face-to-face in the community, often with service clubs or churches, you know, whoever will have us. And then we're out talking about the benefits of the hospice program. Fundraising, as far as the foundation was concerned, has always been face-to-face. Mm-hmm. So normally in June, we have a breakfast fundraiser that was canceled this year. We're not certain we can have one this June. Likely we won't. We're already talking about maybe moving it toward fall. So what we're doing is we decided to take this opportunity to really update and revamp our website so it could be more of a educational and fundraising tool. And that's in process right now. So we have a new webmaster. I suspect it'll be up and running fully. I mean, it's there now, but it'll be up and running fully in a month.
In normal times, how does the foundation go about raising money?
Well, we do get memorial donations. 87% of it goes to the hospice program. 13% Wow. is what it costs to run the foundation. And then the foundation itself, the board, is all volunteer. The expertise of the board is interesting. I mean, we have one retired oncology nurse. We have a businessman who is semi-retired, who moved here from Dallas, but still has his business in Dallas. We have a pastor. I'm a psychotherapist, and I've done that here for 35 years. And the current board president is a retired business person from Seattle. The new president, who will be seated this month, is a retired hospital and mental health administrator from Los Angeles. So we have quite a variety. Also, we have a poet, wonderful poet, and we're all volunteers. Now, most of the people on the board have had either direct experience of hospice with their families or friends, or they have worked in the medical field or mental health field where they see the benefit of it.
What are the Hospice Foundation's goals and hopes for the future? And by that, I mean, once this pandemic is done and things are back to some kind of semi-normal, what do you think your hopes and goals are going forward?
Well, first off, we have to reestablish some of the, and this is where Tammy Tarsa, who's the executive director of an hospice, can talk. Some of the services normally available to hospice patients now not available, largely because volunteers are now not allowed to go in and sit with patients. As you know, so there's quite a volunteer corps that will have to get reestablished, although those people are waiting. And then one of the things the foundation pays for is something called comfort care, which is, it could be a massage, it could be acupuncture, it could be a haircut, music therapy. That needs to get reestablished. That has stopped during the pandemic. Bereavement services continue, but at a limited basis. So that needs to get reestablished. So to your question, Dave, I think we will start doing what we did before, But I think we're going to be way more streamlined because we will have learned how to deal with Zoom and how to actually be more in the internet world with the website. One of the things we're planning on doing right now is doing educational activities in the community via Zoom. Now, we're working on that. We're just, it's a new world, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with it. I have to say, I mean, people in this community are incredibly generous, so we're grateful for that.
So I think what you're saying, in a strange way, the pandemic might have a silver lining or two, in the sense that your organization and many others are figuring out new ways to do things?
I think you're absolutely right. It's caused us to pause and kind of reflect, update, that kind of thing. To update the website. We're looking at all of our literature. It's getting looked at. Bylaws are getting revisited. So yeah, it's a pause, and then we are, you know, going to head out full steam ahead. I do want to, Dave, make a clear distinction here. The foundation is the Hospice Foundation for Jefferson Healthcare, but we are not the hospice program. They're two separate entities. Now, we only serve the hospice program, but we don't run it. They run it. So, you know, every year we get together with the executive director, we have our treasurer, and we kind of work out a budget of how much we're going to donate. In the past years, it's been $70,000 to $80,000 a year. This year, it was down because some of the services that we would normally pay for were halted because of the pandemic. And that's in the kind of comfort care realm. Normally, we would pay for an annual memorial. It was canceled this year. So because of the pandemic, some of the expenses for the foundation are down because it's not happening. So they will start up once the pandemic slows down, hopefully. We pay for bed linens, for instance. If somebody doesn't have enough money to pay for special bed linens for hospital beds, we pay for briefs if people need them. Those kind of incidentals. There's an interesting statistic about it, Dave, that if a person goes into hospice, if a patient goes into hospice, they live longer. And once they pass, their families live longer, particularly the caregiver. So, yeah, I think in a way, I mean, until Bill Maxwell asked me to be on the board, I was not particularly interested in hospice. And who knows, maybe someday I'll avail myself of it and I'll be grateful. And it's just a wonderful service. It makes me just feel more relaxed and comfortable living in this town, knowing that it's available. Yeah.
If someone wanted to make a donation, they're listening to us right now and they think, this is something I need to be part of, what do they do?
They can make a donation. Just go to our website, the Hospice Foundation for Jefferson Healthcare, and you can donate directly through the website. I think these are really difficult times. And we are a community, and I think that's really important, and we really need to do everything we can to support one another. And to that end, the Hospice Foundation is doing that, but you are doing that, Dave, and I so appreciate it. So, yeah, we will get through this, and it's challenging.
With Tammy Tarsa, Executive Director of Jefferson Healthcare's Home Health and Hospice Team, and Tom Duke, a board member and fundraiser for that program, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon, with repeat airings Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. Exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.